Hello again and welcome back. President Obama is moving to restore Pell Grants to incarcerated criminals, funding that will enable those who qualify to take courses for college credit. The prison grants were banned 2 decades ago. Numbers show that better educated prisoners are less likely to return to prison. For 3 years, Washington University has been sponsoring a pilot program called the Washington University Prison Education Program. It offers college courses for credit to prisoners. There are other programs here and in other states. Such programs have their critics, but there seems to be mounting evidence that there are cost and social benefits. Joining me in studio are two Washington University professors who have been teaching college-level classes at the Missouri Eastern Correctional Center in Pacific. Professor Margaret Garb teaches history. Professor Robert Henke is professor of drama and comparative literature. He teaches literature at Pacific. Thank you both so much for being with us. I asked you during the break, and you were responding as we came back. Which of you has taught longer at Pacific?
I think
we've both taught at Pacific last fall, one semester at Pacific.
One semester. Okay. Well, let me start. Robert, I'll start with you then.
Sure.
Rob, you prefer Rob and Maggie.
Rob is great.
Okay. What is the difference between teaching an incarcerated person and teaching a 19-year-old college student?
Well, they're both very good students in different ways. The college students are very well prepared in terms of their writing skills and their quantitative reasoning skills and in many other ways. The incarcerated students have a real passion and a real desire to succeed, and there's something really at stake for them in these courses. They bring a kind of – and they also bring a real life – experience to the courses.
And Maggie, they're a little bit older generally, I suppose, so therefore a little more mature.
Yeah, they are a little bit older. They've had a lot more life experience, and they take their work very seriously. Our students on campus take their work seriously,
sure,
too. But the incarcerated students come to class having read everything. They bring dictionaries and look up words that they don't understand. And they raise some really interesting and complicated questions about their work.
Do they recognize what the payoff could be for them if they take this seriously?
Absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely. They're very serious about it. They all want to get degrees. Some of them talk about going to graduate school. They all have big aspirations.
Do they get degrees? I guess you haven't been at it long enough for that to happen.
We haven't been at it that long. We just started offering courses last August, just a year ago. We actually do have one student who has begun taking courses at University College. He got out of the prison in May, and he's ready to go.
If they have been taking your courses and they are released, do they automatically get accepted someplace, or is there a connection there?
Certainly the credits, you know, WashU credits, have pretty good standing, so they transfer. The credits do transfer, and we're building towards an associate's degree, a 2-year degree, where we're going to be offering basic electives and basic kinds of requirements that will, if they don't get the AA degree while in prison, they could pursue it out of prison.
Maggie, the notion that they are going to be better off and maybe get a job and what have you, they get that. How is it working? Do we have any kind of data yet after this brief period of time to determine if that works?
There's tons of data. There have been several major studies. The Pew did a study. The RAND Corporation did a major study recently. What we know is that recidivism rates for people who have been incarcerated are above 50% nationally. For people who take one college course or any college while in prison, the recidivism rates drop to below 20%. So college in prison is the most effective and inexpensive way to break the cycles of crime and of mass incarceration, and really the most effective way to make our communities safer.
One of the first questions that people ask, I'm sure, and I'll ask it of you first, is the safety issue. I do feel safe and secure.
What, in the prison?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Prisons are fairly safe places. There are lots of guards. There's lots of supervision. And the other part of it is that the guys that we are teaching take their classes so seriously that they don't want to do anything to mess up this opportunity. So, yes, I feel very safe.
I have a little story on that. We had a philosophy professor, Claude Evans, teaching this past spring, and a student was leaning back on his chair. It broke, and a pretty hefty piece of metal fell off. And immediately, everyone in the class said, "Give it to the professor." give it to
them. And they wanted him to call the guard immediately because nobody wanted to be accused of touching this piece of metal and perhaps causing some kind of disturbance.
What about the cost of this? And who is paying for it? Obviously, you folks
We're fortunate to have the wonderful Bard Prison Initiative that was just featured in a New York Times article in relation to the Pell Grants is supporting us for an initial 3-year period.
Yeah. There are a lot of critics, though, who claim that any money, particularly with regard to the Pell Grants, that any money that is being proffered really should go to students who need assistance, financial assistance, rather than criminals.
Well, one thing we're doing is very important. We're also offering courses to the prison staff, guards and administrators at the prison, and that is really helping, I think, the learning environment and disciplinary environment at the prison. You know, these courses are very hard work. They don't have the amenities of the nice yards and plants on the campus. They work hard. If they don't make it, they get, you know, they drop out of the program. And the results, I think, are really beneficial. It saves money for taxpayers.
Yeah, the RAND study found that for every dollar spent on prison education, taxpayers save $4 to $5. Prison education is much cheaper than keeping people in prison.
Obviously, you're in favor of what the president is doing with the Pell Grants. The numbers that I've seen, and I may be off a little bit, are that it costs $35,000 to $40,000 a year to incarcerate someone and $5,000 a year for the Pell Grants. And there's the difference.
Yeah, it's an enormous difference. The other thing is that in the early 1990s, when Pell Grants were available to incarcerated people, less than 1% went to incarcerated people. So we're not talking about prisons taking up a large portion of Pell Grant money.
Yeah, we have a very low overhead. It's mostly for instructors' stipends and supplies. We're not an expensive program.
What is the application process like for these prisoners?
Well, we changed it the last time. The first time we just did a paper application process. We asked them to write two essays, one an essay in which they stated why they wanted to do the program and a second essay in which they talked about a film or a book or a person who had influenced them. This second time we had interviews, and we interviewed each and every of the, I think this time there were 42 applicants for 17 spots, and that was really interesting. Actually, we felt so badly about having to reject some of them that we started a book club for those who we weren't able to accept into the program. Because one of the big questions we asked them was, well, what do you read?
Yeah.
You know, what books have you read? And, you know, some had great answers, and a lot of them just, there isn't a culture of reading. And so that's something we're going to encourage.
Only 17 at Pacific.
We have 30 overall. We had started we just were replenishing our numbers to get back to 30 overall participants in the program.
You're teaching literature, Rob, and Maggie, you're teaching history. Is that correct?
Yeah, I taught an American history course last fall. The interesting thing was that I was teaching the exact same course on campus. So it was the Survey of American History to 60 students on campus and to 15 in the prison. Exact same reading, exact same assignments, exact same classroom discussion.
Are these the only two courses being taught?
Oh, no. There are many more courses. I taught a course, by the way, on classical to Renaissance literature. It was a heavy reading list, Homer, Shakespeare, Dante, Montaigne, and so forth. But we're very excited. We have this fall a course on genetics and a course on theater and public speaking. And then in the spring, I think we're almost certain to have four courses, one in physics, introduction to physics, mm-hmm. one it's going to be called Positive Psychology. It's taught by an endowed professor at Washington University, Randy Larson, who does research on happiness. And then a course on Western civilization, and finally a course on archaeology. So we're really broadening out.
It certainly sounds it. I read an article that was written about this whole Washington University project here. And one of the things that was pointed out, and I think it was with your class, Rob, it must have been, is the fact that the insight that they have into some of the classics of literature really are quite remarkable. I mean, they can associate a lot of some of the most famous works with their own lives.
Well, they really can. We started with the Odyssey. Which was wonderful. It's about this man, Odysseus, who has everything. He's a king. He's a commander. He arrives in Troy with this great fleet, and the war is over. He comes back, and little by little, he loses one thing after another. He loses his ships. He loses his men. He finally is thrown up on an island. He has just pretty much his naked body, and he calls himself at one point nobody. And the men did really understand what it's like to be bereft. Then what he has to do is he has to come back to his home, back to Ithaca, and regain his identity. He has to, and he comes first in disguise. He bit by bit reveals himself to various people, reveals himself to his son. There's a wonderful recognition scene between the son, Telemachus, and his father that we actually did a little bit of a staging of. We had a first-year party, a first-year celebration, and the incarcerated students reenacted that scene. So, yeah, they really touch base with it.
I can see how that might happen more readily and more easily with regard to literature. But what about with history, Maggie? Do you see any connections that they're making with history?
Oh, absolutely. With a number of history books, but one we read, A Slave Narrative by Harriet Jacobs. And certainly they related to the efforts, you know, the sort of struggles of the enslaved people. What was interesting to me was they also related to the struggles of poor whites in the South and raised a lot of questions about why poor whites and enslaved people didn't find common cause. And so it got to these questions about the intersections of race and class, and sort of hierarchies in society. So they asked a lot of really sharp and interesting questions.
I would make an assumption that many of the people that you're dealing with don't have much of an education going in. I mean, that's part of the reason they're there.
Well, they have to have either a high school diploma or a GED equivalent. That's required to even apply.
We have a caller who wants to get into this conversation, and Pianchi, I guess is the way it's pronounced. Pianchi, do I have it right?
Yes, you have it right. I just want to make a comment on the Pell Grant.
Yeah.
I'm totally against Pell Grants being directed the way the president suggested. And for the obvious reason, Don, students that do the right thing, stay out of trouble, and they work hard, they should be rewarded. I think the Pell Grants that are being applied to those particular students I just mentioned need to be doubled, if anything. So if children are coming out of college with this overwhelming debt on their shoulders, which really is not good. So come up with a different way to achieve what you're trying to achieve with prison. It would best to keep them out of prison in the first place, then you wouldn't have to be spending all this money. But Pell Grants for prisoners, no.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. That's sort of off point. We're not talking about Pell Grants per se, although they have just recently been restored. What do you think, Maggie, about Pianchi's comments?
Well, I mean, I think everybody should have access to Pell Grants if they want to go to college. I don't think that we should be limiting them in any way. I think anybody who wants to go to college should have some support from the government if they need it. As I said earlier, the portion of Pell Grants going to incarcerated students is like less than 1%. So we're not talking about incarcerated students taking Pell Grant money away from other students in any large numbers. So I think that that's a bit misguided. And the other point is that college in prison makes our communities safer and stronger. It's good for all of us.
We should point out, by the way, that the Washington U program has nothing to do with Pell Grants per se, right?
No, we are not receiving any government money.
Rob,
no.
I know you wanted to comment.
Yeah. It's not that just because someone is a prisoner, they can hop into our classes. There's a pretty rigorous application process, and they turn out to be very self-selected people who have really made a decision to pursue education in order to improve their lives.
What kind of changes do you see in these individuals from the time you get them initially until the time they move on to the next course or whatever?
Well, one thing is it really does change the culture of prison. A number of them have talked to me about how they now start talking about, 16th century French philosophy in the weight room. And it's, there aren't a lot of, sometimes I think conversation in prison and other places as well can be pretty deadening. But it has, I think, in a small way changed the culture. And I think it's the warden of the prison, Jennifer Saxey, who's been very, very supportive, really encourages us because I think it makes a difference in behavior.
What kind of changes, Maggie, have you seen?
I think the biggest change within the classroom is that the guys become more confident and more sure of their own voices, and they're very, very comfortable engaging in debate, discussing complicated issues. And part of what I think happens is they learn to resolve differences of opinion through open debate, right? Which is
that's a
really
change,
powerful
probably, yeah.
shift.
Yeah.
And I think that they really enjoy the fact that somebody takes seriously their opinions. I think that's important.
It's only men that you're teaching, too. There are no women involved.
Yeah, it's all men.
There are women in the staff courses. But the thing about our program is once you walk through the yard and you enter the seminar room, they become students. And they really relish that. And they take it very seriously. And what they say really matters. And they can see that it matters.
I think we're trying to create a new kind of intellectual community within our classrooms, a place where you debate ideas, where you read critically, and think deeply about a whole range of issues. And I think they enjoy that. They want to be part of that community.
There's no reason to suggest or even to assume that just because people are in prison that they are not intelligent. They've made mistakes, but that doesn't mean they're dumb.
No, some of these guys are very, very smart. And some are actually quite good writers. They're very skilled thinkers and have a lot to say.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're perhaps a little bit better at taking a position and arguing a position. Though I must agree with Maggie in a very civil way. We have some great discussions and arguments.
I'll bet you've seen some changes in personality along those lines through the courses. Let's take another couple of calls. We'll bring in Will, who's calling from St. Louis. Will, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. You know, I want to just applaud their guests for their efforts on this program. This is really a fantastically exciting thing to be talking about. You know, prisoners' rights is really something that aren't discussed. Prisoners in general aren't discussed. But I just want to, open up the conversation. You know, what are we doing to ensure that prisoners can use what they've learned once they get out of prison? A lot of these guys have records. You know, politicians never talk about this. I mean, the only politician around here that ever talked about this is State Senator Jamila Nasheed. She does a fantastic job in election year, no doubt. But she's more the exception to the rule. I mean, what are we doing to ensure that they can use this education for the betterment of not only themselves, but society once they get out?
Thanks, Will. Thanks for the call. Do you have any idea? That's a new program. It's a pilot program. Are you far enough along to answer that question?
We don't have enough experience to answer that question, although, as Rob pointed out, we have one student who has left prison and is starting at University College at WashU in the fall. Certainly, we hope that more students will be able to get out of prison and use the credits they have from WashU to complete their education.
There are practical benefits. They're going to be certainly better writers. They're going to make better job applications. They're going to be taking a course on theater and public speaking. In the spring, that's going to help them a lot. They're going to be learning quantitative reasoning. And I think there's also a dimension, the whole idea of the liberal arts is that you don't always see a direct, immediate payoff between the education and its result. It may be down the road. And we're also enriching their lives and enriching the lives, as Maggie has pointed out before, of the people they return to, of their families when they go back. I think a lot of some of their kids have been inspired to go to college.
But
now,
Will is right, because the record follows them for the rest of their lives in most cases. One more quick call. We'll bring in Victoria calling from Collinsville. But Victoria, it has to be quick.
Okay, hello. I would like to not sound redundant, but also thank you for you two for the work that you're doing in our community. I'm so heartened to hear about this. And I was going to harken back to a previous caller talking about the Pell Grants. I know that's not specifically the issue at hand, but as a college student myself that's struggling, working full-time, going to school full-time, and asking for assistance from the government, I would gladly give that up and take out a larger personal loan in lieu of some of these students being given a little bit of assistance they need, because I feel like us students on the outside, we have that earning potential to be able to make the money to pay off our loans or to pay part of our tuition. But without this help that you're giving these people, this education, like Will was just saying, it is so hard for them to get jobs. And I feel like this is a wonderful step in that process.
Victoria, I've got to stop you right there. Our time is up. I want to thank you for your comments, and I know you folks appreciate what she's saying.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
We have to end it there. I'm afraid our time has gotten away. That's Professor Margaret Garb and Rob Henke. Thank you for telling us about the program, the Washington University Prison Education Program.